So again, Mike Wayne here with another episode of the Bikepacking Podcast. A couple of nights ago, gave a public talk about bikepacking. The talk was centred around the Highland 550 and the Welsh 550, Cylchdaith Cymru, both fantastic routes. And a little bit about, you know, what is bikepacking. You always have a mixed audience. Some people are new, some people are inquisitive, some people have done quite a bit, some people have done different types of bikepacking. And do you know what? I really enjoyed it. I thought the talk went quite well. And I got lots of positive feedback for it. What was interesting was at the end of the talk, I asked for questions. And these, I've got six questions here that were asked. So I'm going to call these frequently asked questions. And I'm going to answer them in a little bit more detail if I can in this particular podcast. So this is a frequently asked questions podcast, and it's episode 4 of the Bikepacking Podcast. The first question that came up was, how much food do you carry? And these are all good questions, and they're all slightly dependent on various things. So if you're in a more civilised place, that is somewhere with shops and pubs and things, then you tend to carry less food than you would if you're in a remoter place. But the most extreme example I gave, really, this is all UK-based, remember, was a bikepacking trip through Wales, a Welsh 550, Cylchdaith Cymru. And I set off with 9 evening meals on my bike and porridge for about 12 breakfasts. And there's a couple of reasons for that. I was going for 2 weeks and I didn't want to be holding to where to stop. And there aren't that many supply points in the middle of Wales. You pass through, it's fairly easy to pass through Macunfleth, but until I got down to the south coast then, I wasn't really passing through anywhere. And it's also quite difficult when you pass through places like pass through Swansea, because it's very urban and you've got this big bikepacking bike and you've got to go to the supermarket, find a bike park. You know, they're not that easy places to stock up from. So that's why a lot of food on that one. They were all homemade meals. I made them up myself with couscous, so with freeze-dried rice and the things I add to them. I think I've talked about those in another podcast. And the porridge, the difficulty I have with the porridge is replenishing it on a journey, because I take oats and I add freeze-dried fruit and a bit of brown sugar. So to replenish that on a journey is a bit awkward to do. Perhaps that's something I need to work out for the next journey. But you don't have to carry any food at all. You can buy stuff on the way. I do use takeaways where I can. I do use cafes where I can. I do use pubs where I can. And I think that's a good thing to do. That's been an ethical tourist. We're already being eco-tourists by being on the bike. So contribute to local economy is a good thing. And how much food you need to carry depends on the journey and the opportunities you've got for resupply. I think what's tricky, sometimes in the summer where you've got light to late, you can have a meal somewhere and then carry on to camp. But if you're going for a meal and it's dark and you haven't got a place to camp, then it becomes more difficult to find a place to camp. So the sort of spring and autumn, which is possibly the most popular, possibly the best time to be out on your bike, it's a little bit tricky to have a meal and then go somewhere to camp. So you tend to be finding somewhere to camp, but kind of stuck there until you have to eat there. So you will eat more camp food than you might imagine. I do have a plan this year, and I will do a podcast on it, depending on how it goes, to just try and do some better food. I've got this titanium frying pan now, so I'm going to be trying to do a bit more real food rather than just relying on freeze-dried food when I'm on my own. But even that will depend on visiting supply places during that particular day. It's not like you can carry meat for days on end on your bike. You have to be a bit careful about the health and safety there. The other meal is lunch. I personally always have a spare malt loaf in my bag somewhere. Might have some sweets, might have some nuts, might have some Eccles cakes, but ideally I'll grab a sandwich somewhere, or I'll have some flatbreads and some cheese and something to make a sandwich on the way. Just important to always have something, really. Just need something to eat. And the next question I got was, what is the advantage of bags, as in bike packing bags, over panniers? I haven't used panniers, so I can't really answer authoritatively on this one. When I have put things on the side of my rack, because I've got this tail fin rack on the back, and I have experimented with popping things on the side of it, I remember taking some fairly small, like small water bottles with a normal screw top lid on with meals in, so that I had them. Well, I just needed a way to carry them, but I lost them. They fell out of the bottle holders that I had on there. The other thing I tried was bags on the down forks at the front, and I don't know, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I'm not saying I'd never do it again, but it just seemed clumpy and clumsy. And it was the same with stuff on the back. I did knock the stuff on the back with my legs and my feet now and then. But I guess the real answer was, I don't need the panniers. I've got the tail fin aero bag on the tail fin rack. Even before I had the aero bag, I just had a dry bag on the rack. And that's, it was a 13 litre. I think the aero pack's designed to be 20 litres. But, you know, somewhere in between that is plenty with everything else on the front handlebars, you know, the tent, the sleeping bag, sleeping mat, the stove on the front handlebars. So it's really spare clothes and bits and bobs going in the back there. I'll only ever take one set of spare bikepacking clothes. I'll wash them and change after a few days. And I'll take one spare pair of evening clothes. So I don't really know why I would need panniers. They're just bigger than I need. And the bike packing bags are really good. I'm not as keen on the saddle bag, I've got to say. I've moved away from the saddle bag. It's okay if it's small. It's a good bag if it's small. But having the rack has improved that luggage option for me. I just don't need to use a saddle bag. And that gives me full freedom with my dropper post as well, which I really like. And then the third question was, how do you keep clean? And when he asked this question, I thought it was on about the bike. And I don't worry too much about the bike. I've got this pinion gearbox and the, carbon fibre drive belt. So it's not like you're stressing with the chain and stressing with the derailleur and things. That's kind of gone out the window. I mean, I do grab a hose pipe when I see one and just give it a quick rinse down. Some of the hotels, pubs that I've stayed at are good for that. I remember just jumping on the end of a cyclist's hose. A motorcyclist was using a hose, power pressure hose in a garage, and I managed to jump on the end of that. I've seen hose pipes on the end of houses and I've used those. So, but he wasn't really asking about bike, and he wasn't really asking about me, but I did describe how, you know, I'll get a shower obviously when I'm in staying somewhere, but if I'm in the wilds, I'll wash in fresh water, I'll jump in and have a swim or lie down, particularly if it's hot, and that's fantastic, A, for cooling down, but also just a really good refreshing wash. It's also possible, and many travellers will tell you this, to wash with a mug. So I always have a little sponge, and I can sponge my body down with not very much water at all. I carry some soap that it doesn't matter if it gets in the water, it's totally eco soap. And washing your body is surprisingly easy, really. I have a pack towel, so I can dry myself. But what he was asking about was clothes. And the system I've developed, I used to wear a set of clothes for 2 days, and I wear them for 3 days. So if you think socks, cycling undies, base layer, they're on for 3 days. And then they're changed for the next set. So I can go 6 days before they need washing. On that seventh day, I will wear my spare gear, and if I'm lucky, I'll be in a hostel or hotel or similar where they can wash your stuff for you. That's the best way to do it. They will take it, wash it, give you back. That's brilliant. Not everywhere does that. And if you're trying to wash stuff in the sink using shower gel that's in the room to wash your stuff, it's not as satisfactory. And then obviously trying to dry it out on the radiators as well, that's pretty painful. I take full advantage of good drying weather when we're out. And I've definitely been plenty of occasions where I've been cycling with wet socks strapped onto my bike somewhere, hoping they'll dry as I drive along, ride along. Me socks and me cycling undies are often to be seen drying while riding. So you wash stuff where you can and when you can. But it is important to stay hygienic. And that seems to work for me. Some people might need to do it more often. Some people probably get away with it less often. I know some people swear by merino wool because it doesn't really smell. And I like merino wool tops. The only downside with it might be a bit heavier than some of the more technical modern fabrics that you might wear. They might be slightly slower drying than some of those fabrics when you do wash it. But, you know, personal choice, merino wool stuff's good. Modern technical stuff is good. And modern technical stuff really dries quickly. So it's not hard to wash it. The hardest things to dry are your cycling undies because of the cushion pad and your good wool socks. So there are issues around washing. I haven't yet been to a laundrette, but I can well see that being a possibility on a long bike ride, popping into a laundrette, sticking your bike and gear in that washing machine and drying. That's about it, really. One set for 3 days, change the next set for 3 days, clothes definitely need washing by the time 6 days is up. Typically you can do it within the 6 days. The next question is a classic British question. How do you cope when everything is soaking wet? And I really know where this person's coming from, because I do get a little bit fed up with it. I can do 3 days, 2 nights in constant pouring rain before I give in, and I have to, even if I have to go off route, I have to find somewhere to go and dry out properly. I just get a bit fed up with it. I do wear a waterproof jacket. In the winter, I'll wear waterproof over trousers. Neither of those things keep you dry in those constant downpours that you get, but they do keep you warm, which is obviously very important. In the summer, I'll just wear quick drying shorts over my cycling undies, get wet, dry out quick. That's a really good system as well. I think the bit I struggle with is my footwear, wearing whatever shoes I wear. Once they get wet, they can be hard to dry out. Even, you know, if you're overnight somewhere, getting them on the radiator and that, they don't always dry out properly. So I'm on the constant search for some quick drying shoes that I can cycle in and walk up hills in. But the way I manage myself is by having a tent that is designed to go up outer first. For me, that's quite important. I know a lot of people manage with tents that go up inner first and they get away with it. But if it's been raining all day, it's raining when you're putting the tent up. It's really good if you've got a tent that either goes up inner and outer at the same time or outer first. So I have a Terra Nova Laser Competition 1, which does exactly that. And what it means is I can get the tent up, and the porch is big enough because the porch runs the length of the tent, it's sidewards on tent. I can strip off in that porch before I get in the tent. So my sleeping bag is a down bag, it's in a waterproof bag, so it's double waterproof bagged. So that won't get wet unless I wet it. So that gets thrown in the tent in its own waterproof bag. The waterproof bag that waterproof bag sits in is the one that straps the front handlebars. That stays in the porch. I pull out the sleeping bag, pop it in the tent, pop the sleeping mat in the tent. So they're in the tent, they're nice and dry. The spare clothes in the tent, all nice and dry. I strip off my outer gear. I strip off everything if I need to. Leave it in the porch. Get in the tent. Get myself warm. Get myself dry. And that works. In the morning, if it's still raining, what I can do is I can take the inner down. I have these closed cell foam pads that act as tent footprint. So I can be on those with all my dry stuff away, kept dry, in the waterproof bags, in the waterproof bags. I can then get the rest of my clothes on, which are probably still wet from the day before, the outer layers, particularly the jacket, the socks. I can get them on underneath the outer tent with the inner tent away and dry and all that dry stuff away. And then the very last minute, when I'm fully ready, I can pop out, nip down the outer tent, pop that in another waterproof bag, inside the waterproof bag, so that it doesn't wet the other things that are already in the waterproof bag. You see what I mean? I can cycle all day. If there's a break in the weather, that outer tent comes straight out and dries off pretty quickly. If I get any break in the weather, that'll dry almost instantly. If I don't get a break in the weather, it doesn't matter. Go to camp, outer up first again, get in the inner, get myself sorted out under there, keeping your sleeping bag dry, keeping everything dry that needs to stay dry, and keeping everything wet out in the porch that needs to stay out in the porch. And it's, you do get used to it, you do get systems that work for it. But I will say, for me, 2 nights, 3 days, I am getting a bit fed up with it. So you do have to learn to manage the rain if you're going to backpack in the UK, because it rains, and nothing you can do about it. And then the next question was, do you ever lock your bike? The glib answer is, if you're somewhere where you need to lock your bike, you're not in the right place. You're not bikepacking in the right places. You shouldn't be going somewhere where you don't need to lock your bike. But again, that's pretty easy to say. Most of the places, you will not need to lock your bike. If you're camping where nobody can see you, out of the way, you just lie your bike down outside the tent. It doesn't need locking. Even if you pull up in small villages and remote places in the shop, you can usually just leave your bike outside and pop in. It's not a problem. You can usually see your bike if you're in a cafe. Sometimes you can take the bike around the back into the tea garden or the beer garden or whatever's around the back, and that's a nice easy place to leave your bike. Out of sight, out of mind. Sometimes, you know, there's people there, you can have a little chat and you say, just watch my bike while I go in. But I do carry a small lock. It's not the sort of lock you carry around town. It is just a really little one, basically a bit of wire with a combination on. The reason I go for the combination one is so I don't have to carry a key, because carrying a key is a pain, isn't it? You don't want to be carrying keys if you can avoid it, because they get lost. And it would be fairly easy to snip it with bolt croppers, but it'd be hard work to cut it with anything else. So it's a deterrent. If you're really stressed about security, just take one of your axles out, something like that, and it just makes it a lot harder for people to steal your bike. Only time I really like to put the lock in is if I do stop, say I stop at a supermarket somewhere, and, you know, it's a big car park, there's a bike, place to leave your bikes, just lock my bike there and go in the supermarket, and that seems to work quite well. But by and large, I'd like to say, I don't lock it, I never lock it, I don't need to lock it, but I do take a lock just in case, depending where I end up. And then the last of these questions was, what mapping do you use? And this is a whole subject in itself, really. We'll probably do some sort of podcast on route planning and that sort of thing in due course. I think it might be my age, but I'm kind of stuck with the OS maps, really. I do use Komoot, but I don't follow the route on Komoot. because I just like the OS map. There's a lot more information on the OS map. It tells me things a commute map doesn't. I tend to use the OS map on Outdoor Active. Outdoor Active seems to work quite well. I'm happy to pay the subscription, and it's got a really good planning facility. And what's nice about the Outdoor Active is you've got a map similar to the commute map. You've got the Outdoor Active map, and that will have paths on because it's based on OSM mapping that aren't on the Ordnance Survey map. But the Ordnance Survey map will then tell you whether that path is a public right-of-way or not. So sometimes you'll get routed down an estate track or something that isn't really a public right-of-way. But by double-checking with the Ordnance Survey map, you'll know if you're on a proper cycleway or a bridleway. On the Ordnance Survey map, and certainly on Outdoor Active, you can on OS Maps app as well. You can get the National Cycle Network imposed over the top. Outdoor Active will drop on mountain bike routes as well. So if you're going past a trail centre, you can just touch a little button on your screen. It'll drop the trails onto your OS map as well. So really quite powerful tools or things. But at home, I will look at Strava heat maps. I will upload things to Komoot because Komoot's very good. I have a page on Komoot called Wales Bikepacking, and it's a really easy to use, accessible site. So I'll upload GPX files to Komoot so that you can download them and use them. And then I'll find things on Komoot and download the GPX file myself so that I can use them. Planning tends to be done on Outdoor Active on the OS map there, but I still like the OS maps as well. So what I'll tend to do is get the paper OS maps out on the big table at home, on the dining table, and I'll look at the OS maps and I'll go with the highlighter and highlight bridleways and cycleways and then try look for ways to link them up. Outdoor Active will do this quite well, and Komoot will also suggest routes between places, which are often really good. You've just got to be mindful that they might route you down a footpath that you're not supposed to be on, or a track that you're not supposed to be on. I'm not too precious about being exactly where I'm legally supposed to be, because exactly what is a right-of-way is something that's a bit of an accident of history in many ways. In 1949, parish councils were asked to decree which routes around their parish were footpaths and which were bridleways, and the criteria either wasn't clear or wasn't consistent because different parishes came up with different designations, often for the same route. It changes between parishes. It could be a bridleway in one parish, a footpath in the next parish, and there are plenty of footpaths that look like bridleways, and there's quite a few bridleways that look like footpaths. So I mean, to be honest, it doesn't matter too much where you go, as long as you're sensible. And the really important thing for me is to give way to walkers. It's like that hierarchy, isn't it? So if I am on what turns out to be a footpath, as long as I give way to walkers and pass the time of day, I always have a bell. People seem, in my experience, prefer a bell. I've been thanked a couple of times for having a bell, because a bell is... it's not a human interaction. If I say, however nice I say, excuse me, please, can I come past on my bike? This is me telling somebody to get out of the way, or that's how it's perceived. Whereas just a little ding on the bell, most people, ooh, that's nice, and get out of the way. So I'm a big fan of having a bell. But the question really was about the maps I use. What mapping do you use? And most often I use Outdoor Active, create a GPX file in there, and then I share that with my Wahoo. So I've got my Wahoo on the handlebars, and that will just follow the GPX and tell me whether to turn left or turn right. I do find myself frequently checking back to the OS map, but I think that's me as much as anything else. It's really good having OS map in there, because you can change your route as well. If you're stuck with a little bike computer or GPS on your handlebars and you're turning left, turning right, and you know something's not going to plan, a track's harder than it should be, or the weather's worse than it should be, or you have a mechanical, then having the Ordnance Survey map is really, really useful, because you can change your map and go a different way. And it's hard to carry all the paper maps now. Imagine carrying all the paper maps for doing a round Wales journey. People used to do that, and they used to post them home and they'd finish with them, and they used to post them to places to collect and all sorts of fancy things like that. Now we're in the position where we just have the maps on the phone. Make sure you download them to your phone, though. That's the main thing. And make sure you do monitor your charging. I find my phone lasts all day, even using it for mapping, photographs, bits of video, whatever. Where the battery gets eaten is if you're tracking the route on the phone. So I never track a route on the phone. I track a route on the Wahoo GPX. But I do have a battery pack as well. Why wouldn't you have a battery pack? That's really not difficult, is it? So that's the mapping. Not difficult. If you're just starting out, outdoor active is great, because you've got the outdoor active map, you've got aerial photographs, you've got the OS mapping on the different scales. It's all there. And honestly, for what you get, and it's worldwide, for what you get, a subscription's not bad at all. That's what I would choose. Look, if you have any questions or anything you want to ask away, then stick it in the comments. Still new to this podcast, so the more you can share and get other people involved, subscribe please, because that way you'll be informed when there's a new episode, and it'll move up and get more visible. It still needs to be more visible than it is now. But what I'm doing, and I'm not worrying about that at the moment, I'm just trying to create some content so you've got something that is worth subscribing to and listening to. And I'll try to do another episode as soon as I can. So, hey, thanks for listening. Happy riding. I'll see you around.